go! Welcome to the Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast with your host, Steve Schaubecker. Get ready to get behind the scenes look into what it really takes to grow a business from scratch in the firearms industry. Join us as we welcome industry titans, Second Amendment enthusiasts, and special guests each week. I welcome you to the Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast.
Welcome back to the Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm Steve Schaubecker, your host, and I've got a great show in store for you today. We're going to go a little different direction. So on our podcast and a lot of other podcasts, especially business ones, people love to talk about their successes and the things they did right and the things that they are just really excited about. Well, today we're going to take it a little direction differently, and we're going to talk about the mistakes we've made. We're going to talk about the lessons we've learned from those mistakes, and so that we can try not to repeat them again. So we're going to go deep. We're going to start at the beginning. We're going to go back a few businesses. We're not just going to talk about Sheepdog, but we're going to go back to pretty much my whole career as an entrepreneur and pull out some of the biggest ones. Some of them will still be recent because they're fresh in my mind, but I will pull out some really old ones too that learned some big lessons long ago. Well, the first one actually would go back to one of my first companies, the first one that grew to eight figures. And the biggest thing we learned from that one was know your numbers. Not just at tax time, not just at quarterly meetings. Know them at least on a weekly basis. Not knowing your numbers can allow things to happen, and you can hit so far down a path that it can be really hard, if not impossible, to cover. Make sure you know what's working, make sure you know what's not working, and, you know, be on top of those things. And, you know, oh, you can feel like business is going great, and you can feel like things are going really well, but in all reality, the numbers are saying a different story, and the numbers don't lie. You know, feelings are fake, but numbers are for real. Another lesson we learned back then was when we started growing really fast, we let the business drive the business instead of us driving the business. What I mean by that is referrals, a lot of great leads coming in, all those sorts of things really took on a mind of their own. And it made us believe in the back of our minds that this would always be that way. So we started slacking on our actual written marketing plan. We started slacking on, you know, doing the things that we should have been, continue to do to make sure that our pipeline stayed full. We were just busting at the seams with growth at the time, and we never thought that it would ever dry up. Well, it did, and we had some really bad months because we didn't think ahead and that we stopped doing the things that we should have been doing all along and just let the business drive instead of us driving. This is a funny one, but not a funny one. This one cost us multiple six figures, a lot of money. Bothers me that this happened, but here's the thing. You got to take a look at things and learn from them, and this one took a long time for us to learn from. Basically, it was trusting people too much. I'm going to tell you a story about one that was especially painful, but here's the thing is you can't trust people too much or you can get burned. Trusting is good, but verify. And if you expect something, inspect it. That's what you have to do to make sure that things are going the way you want and people are being 100% honest with themselves and honest with you. So I'll tell you a little story. Back in our early days, this was in our big growth phase with the previous company. We were in the alarm, fire alarm, security, cameras, access control. We were also a licensed locksmith. And we were growing very, very fast, and we had to bring on more salespeople. Well, when adding to our sales team, our interview process was, quite frankly, was crap back then. And so we had this guy in our second interview through our process, and we thought we had done a pretty good vetting of him and whatnot. And so he sits down with us and said, you know, our compensation package at the time was pretty commission heavy. It had a small base salary in there and had full benefits, but the most of it was commission. And so the guy sits down, make the guy an offer to the guy. He sounds like he's really on board. He's aligning with everything with us. And I thought he'd be a good fit to the team, and I thought he'd be a rock star. Well, he sits down with me afterwards and says, "Hey, you know what, Steve, I'd love to take this position, but unfortunately, I can't financially do it. It's going to take me a little while to build a book of business here. You know, I have a family and three kids, and I need some, I just couldn't do it. Is there any way you would consider giving me an advance on commission or some sort of a bridge just to get me through for the first 4 to 6 weeks till I can really hit the ground running?" I thought about it, and mistakenly, I did. We had a policy of not doing that, but I talked to my partner, and I said, "Hey, I really think we should bring this guy on." You know, clearly the guy sold me. But time goes on, and, you know, 4 or 6 months down the road, and we had a pretty short sales cycle. Typically, when our sales cycle was anywhere from 30 to 60 days, so we got 4 months down the road, and he hadn't closed a single deal, other than a couple of layups that we had given him that were, you know, kind of house accounts. Well, started looking into, we were using a CRM at the time, started looking into, and everything looked right. He was showing all kinds of contacts. He was showing some things in the works. Every time I talked to him, he had the right things to say. And, you know, obviously he was supposed to be working for us, you know, full time, getting out there at least 40, 50 hours a week, talking to people and selling some stuff. Well, 5 months go by, almost six, and then still no closes other than the things we had given him as company layups. And so I really started digging in a little bit deeper. So at that point, I had my assistant start doing a little bit deeper dig into this guy and asking around and whatnot, and also calling some of the people that he was supposedly talking to, putting into his CRM, into our CRM that supposedly he had met with and all these other sorts of things. Well, we get down the road, and she does her back, and she goes, "No, this isn't good. You know, you got to call him in and talk to him. He hasn't been talking to any of these people. I have doubts that he's even working for us at all." And I was like, "What? No, that's just not even possible, you know." Well, she takes and calls his previous employer and tries to get a hold of him, thinking, well, you know what, maybe he's still working there, maybe he never did. And her gut was right. He had never quit his previous job. He was telling us he was working, 40, 50 hours a week or more, trying to see clients for us and sell for us. Turns out he probably was working zero. Everything he was putting in the CRM was clearly fake, clearly things that he was just Googling. So I called him in to have a little chat with him. Was not happy at all. Get him down there and start asking him about it. And then he gets all angry. And the territory he was working was probably an hour away from our office. So started screaming about me having him come down there and me having him come down there just to quote do this to him. And I was like appalled. I was just, man, I was, it's a good thing there was a table between us because I just wanted to grab him and shake him. I couldn't believe the stuff this guy was saying and whatnot. He was basically effectively stealing from us and just was mad at us because he had to come face us in the end. Well, so we had, of course, terminated him. Come to find out it was even worse as we got down the road and found out more things about him. You know, he had given me that spiel if he needed this bridge because he had these, you know, he had a family and three kids. Turns out he wasn't married, didn't have a family, didn't have any kids, at least not any that anybody around him knew of. And it was just all a big lie. Lost a lot of money on that one, learned a hard lesson. You know, I'll never change how I am. I'll never change my belief that people are good and whatnot, but certainly have changed as a business a lot of things we do as far as the trust but verify and you know, inspecting what we expect, just not to be dumb and not to get fooled like that again. You know, we thought that would be the last time, but there was certainly got fooled a time or two more. Nothing to that extent, but you know, salespeople that would be putting fake leads, one to the fact that actually he is another guy who actually just like fell off the face of the earth, never really quit, never fired him. He just disappeared. But anyway, this guy had stuff in CRM and a couple of the sales were marked as closed and that he just needed to pick up payment for the deposit on the jobs. He had disappeared and never came back. So we dug into his CRM, of course, and I had another sales rep try to go follow up on these things because we wanted to take care of these people, especially if they're expecting something from us. Come to find out, these more fake stuff put in there, and one of the things was actually a country club, and guy went in there, and they had never even heard of the previous employee, and certainly never even heard of us. But you know, lots of lessons that way. I won't dwell on it too much longer, but definitely you know, be trusting, be who you are, but definitely verify. And if you expect something from people, then inspect it. Since then, we've tweaked our hiring process so much, and there's just so many more hoops to jump through, and just definitely establishing our core values with the help of one of our mentors, Thomas Keenan, has helped us a lot too. And using those to hire and to fire and to just put those out there has made a huge difference as far as how we do business and across all of our businesses, not just specifically one, but all of them in general. All right, well, we'll leave that one alone. I spent probably too much time talking about it, but other lessons, and these were some recent ones. When we were building out our store in Dyer, Indiana, this will come forward to Sheepdog, but we had some issues there too. Looking back, you know, so there was already a builder that was in the space working for the landlord. And on another unit. So the landlord said, hey, why don't I just use him for the build out? Let's tell us what you want. Let's design it. We did that. Well, unfortunately, it was nothing but delays. And we're not exactly still to this day sure why. Really, what it seemed like is the builder was more focused on completing this other unit and was using all of his manpower for that and was getting zero manpower for us. We were supposed to be open around July. We had signed the lease back in April of 2021, supposed to be open around July. Ended up finally getting open November 15th of 2021 in that second location. And, you know, obviously the money we lost by not being open and whatnot was just probably quite a bit. You know, a lot of that actually sent around too is another mistake we made was trusting that everything would be completed when they said it would, and making a lot of business decisions based on that. We probably should have waited. You know, we ordered a lot of stock. We had a lot of stuff sitting here. We were paying a lot of debt service on product that we couldn't move and barely had a place to store. Lots of lessons around that one. Going forward, any contract we sign with a builder, we'll have a hard timeline and provisions in there to hold them to that timeline. None of this best effort stuff. In this case, I know obviously in this climate that we're in, there's a lot of issues going on with materials availability and all those sorts of things. That's a different story. In this case, none of that was it. This was really simple. Actually, the build out we got was really just it was a new building, so nothing was put up. It was basically just putting up demising walls between the units next door, and then, you know, putting in a wall for a back room and bathroom, and painting the ceiling, painting the walls. That's pretty much it. So real simple, basically what you'd consider probably a white box. And then everything else we were doing was coming in after that to put in all our displays and slat wall and on the walls and all those other sorts of things. They weren't doing any of that for us. So it was real simple for them. All the stuff was readily available. And probably the worst part of it was that the materials were actually sitting there for a couple of months. They, of course, blamed it on the state of Indiana and the permitting process. But as we all know, in most situations, the squeaky wheel usually gets the oil. So I'm sure they applied for the permits and then just didn't contact anybody and didn't follow up and just kind of let it go because they weren't in any hurry at all. So lessons learned from that one, too. Sometimes you can put yourself in a situation where you can have unnecessary risk because of the actions of others. So that's something we're very much looking to mitigate in the future. Going back to actually the first store here in Moni, one of the biggest mistakes I think we made was to not expect or not plan for the growth that we had. We found ourselves reconfiguring and changing walls and moving things a couple times in the beginning, which probably could have been avoided if we had just imagined what's next, you know, what happens if this thing grows. Maybe it wouldn't have taken off the way it did, but it did, and it certainly could have. So we needed to definitely make sure that how we set things up were conducive to a path for growth. Trying to think five steps ahead and trying to think a couple years down the road. At the time, we didn't look at that business in any kind of a light like we see it now. So failing to plan ahead and failing to think of the next phases in growth, they talk about that 1-3-5-year plan, what's next? We thought about none of that. All we thought about is, hey, what layout works right now? What do we think this should be? Never once even considered the fact that it would grow like it would. Although obviously when we opened it, that wasn't our plan to try to grow it like that. It just kind of happened on its own. But of course, we're glad it did. And we could have saved some time and money and downtime if we had just planned ahead for it. Recently, the battle we've been fighting that we're actually working on is, it's tough when, especially now with the two stores, to keep stock on hand. You might think, okay, it's a gun shop. What is it? How many guns do you have? How many products do you actually have? Well, between the two stores, and obviously the Dyer store is twice the size, so it has twice the products, if not more. We have about 2,000 different SKUs that we stock. Now, if you can imagine trying to keep of 2,000 different things and keep track in two locations of what's in stock, what's not. We've tried various methods. In the beginning, we tried just having the managers submit a report of, basically empty peg report. Hey, what's empty? What was supposed to be in that spot? And then we can look up and see how many of them we sold. But what we're actually doing now that's going to be much more effective is systematizing it. So we found out our POS actually has a method of tracking mins and maxes, and then you can run a report and it'll actually make up a PO for you that you can send to wherever you need to send it to or split it up or whatnot, that will list all the products that you need and how many you should be ordering of them. So we're in the process of getting that implemented so that we can see that, hey, we're down to one of these. We normally sell about 4 or 5 a month. We need to order a couple more to get those on the shelf so that the shelf can stay stocked the whole time. By doing this, it's going to save a ton of labor for everybody, and more importantly, it's going to make sure that the things that people want to buy are on the shelf all the time. Now, certainly if there's supply issues, there's always issues there, even in good times. Every item isn't always available all of the time, but we're going to try to do a little better job of forecasting and a little better job of carrying a small amount of back stock on the most popular items. So to make sure that we have the things that our customers want to buy. Because every time something's not on the shelf and they want to buy it, that's certainly a lost opportunity. And they may come back for it, they may special order it, but a lot of times they may not also. This next one that comes to mind actually is more of a general comment, and it's happened several times over the course of my career actually working for others and then my career as an entrepreneur, but not being focused. Not having too many irons in the fire and trying to do too many things at once. Now, personally, I tend to just gravitate that way because I'm I don't know if you call it ADD, whatever you want to call it, but I have a short attention span. I like to be doing a lot of different things. It really takes me a lot to focus on one thing for a long period of time. One thing I have found is it helps if I break down the one big thing I'm working on into smaller tasks and can check things off. That definitely makes me happier. But having too many irons in the fire is definitely no good. Was at a leadership conference, and Lisa Marie Pulaski, if anybody know her, it was her conference, and she made a statement that I probably heard before or something like it, but it really hit home. She basically said, look, why would you try to move hundreds of rocks just a couple of inches when you can move a couple of larger rocks a mile? Now, that's very, very, very true. We're always going to have a priority or a single thing that we're most focused on. But I think we need to get terribly, terribly clear about that. We need to not get distracted. And sometimes you'll have, more than one, but there's really only one. The word priority is singular. Priorities is a newer word. It hasn't been around for that long. Priority is one thing. So what's the one thing that's most important that you get checked off the list or you get accomplished or whatnot? And then once you get that accomplished, then what's the next one on the list? What's the next one on the list? And move forward that way. But trying to move all these things at once and do too many things at once, if you're like me, you're probably going to be terribly ineffective at all of them. I don't know that I personally know anybody in my circle that can work on dozens of tasks all at the same time and be very effective on all of them. It all takes us time to switch gears, if you will. When you're doing one thing or doing one task or working on one process or refining one thing, you definitely can't just immediately switch your brain to a different mode to do a different thing and not lose any time. And the more times you switch, the more lost times there is in the switching process. The last thing that comes to mind, I think, that I want to touch on is, and this is kind of a sales basic, but it took me quite a while to break the habit of it. So as a salesperson, sometimes when you're selling products that are above your thermostat, so like say there's like when we have a gun in stock that's a $5,000 custom gun or $10,000 custom gun, well, for the most part, that's more than I would ever spend on a gun. And it's tough for me to talk about that or talk about the particular product because in the back of my mind, I am looking at that with my temperature, you know, my financial temperature, my tolerance for pain, if you will, as far as digging into the wallet. Well, the thing you have to remember is that you need to shop with your customer's wallet, and everybody has a different thermostat. Everybody has a different, you know, tolerance of what they want and what they're looking for. And, you know, one man's ceiling is another man's floor. So to me, that's an expensive gun. But to someone else, a $10,000 gun may be just entry level and the cheapest one in their collection. You know, we have to remember that we need to tailor that experience to each individual customer and to allow them to shop and figure out what they want and figure out what their tolerance is. Now, it's always a tough conversation, and it helps as you get to know customers and move forward with them, especially in our industry. But in the beginning, you don't just walk right up to someone and say, hey, what's the most you want to spend on a gun today? Because that usually is, one, they're not going to give you an accurate answer, and two, they're probably going to be taken back by the question, because I would be. It's really not necessarily a dollar amount now. It's really more of a value proposition. And is that worth to me the amount of dollars that you want me to part with? So don't think about prices and levels and everything with your perception. You know, try to use your customer's perception and keep an open mind. And, you know, and that's the other thing too, is about, you know, you certainly can't judge a book by a cover. I've had guys come in and Rolls Royce and then buy the cheapest gun on the wall, spend $200 on a piece of crap gun that may or may not work, and that's all they wanted to spend. And clearly it wasn't any amount of money to them. They could have bought a $500 Glock or a $2,000, $3,000 Wilson Combat, and it wouldn't have made any difference in their financial life. And then I've had guys that have come in a 20 year old truck that's been looks like it's about to fall apart as they drive away, come in and buy a $5,000 shotgun. So you really can't judge people by what they're driving, what they're wearing, or whatever. Everybody has different priorities in life on how they spend their money, and that's the coolest thing, is each individually we can certainly decide those things for ourselves. Yeah, I hope this dive today was beneficial to you. So I just wanted to peel back a little bit of the layer of me and my entrepreneurial journey. And of course, some of the things were about Sheepdog too. But wanted to share those with you in hopes that they help, and in hopes that some of my mistakes you can avoid. As always, if someone else could benefit from what we talked about today, I'd say please DM them a link. Tag them on Facebook, do whatever it needs, send them a letter, snail mail, carrier pigeon, whatever you got to do to get them the message and get them to listen, because we'd certainly be happy to have them here and love to have them listen to the Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast. Also, if you have any questions or if there's anything we can do to help you, please hit us up, hit us in the DMs, hit us in the email. We're here to help. And stay tuned. We actually have a few new things coming. I actually will having a book, my book released. It's called Adapt and Overcome. It covers some of the topics we cover here on Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast and a whole bunch more. And a lot of cool stories about me as a person too and my family. Should be great. I'm looking really forward to getting that into your hands. And then also we have launching the Tactical Entrepreneur Academy, which will be some online learning as well as an expansion of our coaching program to help entrepreneurs get to the next level. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you for listening to the Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast. If you're still listening to this episode, that means you gained some type of value. So if you could share this to a friend, leave a review, and make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode of Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast.